timing. So our next speaker is related to the water topic. Cal Cooper is Director of Special Projects and Emerging Technology for Apache Corporation. So with that, I'll leave it to you, Cal.
Thank you. So today I want to talk about water management and some things we've accomplished as Apache Corporation in Texas, but most of all I want to talk about what the whole industry has done. 5 years ago, if you talked about water and hydraulic fracturing, you read the New York Times, you were sure the end of the world was coming. The big bad oil companies were going to ruin every bit of fresh water in the whole world, that nothing good was coming about this. You should just shut it all down. And lots of places did exactly that. Fortunately, Texas was more clairvoyant. They knew that the oil and gas business would indeed address the problems and work very hard to solve them. To me, this is a thing to celebrate, that 5 years on, the oil and gas industry as a whole in Texas has done amazing things in the water world. We've investigated many ways to minimize the use of fresh water. We understand where it's really important to not use fresh water, and when there's so much fresh water, you might as well take it out of the river. You know, the Mississippi River actually provides frack water for some places in Louisiana. I'm told we don't do that. But in Texas, there's a huge variability depending on where you are. And I think that one of the big things everyone's got to get to right away is we really don't have to have fresh water for most of our frack jobs. And I'll talk about that more today. So as soon as you can open it up to all kinds of water, you have a lot more opportunity to succeed. We in the oil and gas business use a lot of water. In fact, people think fracking is the big use of water. Well, actually, we use water in drilling, although it's a small percentage of what we do compared to fracking. And a lot of our drilling water can be replaced by oil at certain depths. Shallow drilling is usually with air or with water, sometimes salt water. We manage a huge amount of produced water in this state. It is the legacy of, you know, 60 or 80 years of oil and gas production, and quite a bit of it has high water cuts, and those high water cuts are either reinjected into depleted fields, depleted pressure fields, or they're recycled in the same field, or they're sent to saltwater disposal wells. That's a lot of different things, but it's a huge part of the business, and that produced water is a big opportunity for us in the fracking business, because instead it's a cost to everybody in the business, whether you use that, whether you dispose of it, or whether you use it again. And we're probably going to use water in fracking in the foreseeable decades. I know that it's nice to read an article in some magazine, science magazine, that'll tell you, oh, we're going to use methane, or we're going to use propane, or we're going to use whatever. Well, water is really easy. It's really safe, safe being a really big part of that equation. It works with a lot of chemistry, and we know that it carries sand into our shale reservoirs. I will be very surprised to see it displaced anytime soon. But who knows? Science is always interesting. One of the most important things about water is to remember it has value, and every kind of water has a different value. Fresh water is what gets people most upset. It usually has the biggest values. It's what everyone wants to preserve. But no matter what you're doing to water, it has a cost associated with it. Freshwater transport is one of the most expensive costs in the fracking business because we use so much of it. We don't use anything, though, compared to what agricultural people use. I mean, we rarely use more than a couple percent compared to agricultural usage in the same areas. I hear someplace it might be 10 or 12%, but you know, there are a lot of county statistics about this in Texas. I think, though, that we have to look at a lot of investments into technology, into management of water, are all about its value to the people who are going to use it. And in our industry, there are many, many components of working that value chain. There's a lot that has to be settled in order to make money in fracking. And often 30% of a completions budget is about water, water handling, treatment, everything you can do about water. So it's pretty common in any fracked well that a couple million dollars got spent on water and water handling. So believe you me, there are lots of folks that have their calculators out and are looking for ways to save money. Come on. There we go. So I mentioned before that there were two principal types of water use in the fracking business, where people like to use fresh water and where people like to use can use many alternative types of water. So in classic gel fracking, the kind that was really very, very common, you know, it's still very common, but it was pretty much the main thing that was being done 8 or 10 years ago, that requires a lot of chemistry that worked very well in fresh water because people knew how to do it. They could use commodity chemicals. They had a lot of experience in it. And as soon as they added salt or a lot of metal ions or other things, it would break down. You can see there that it's very sensitive. The chemistry of it all, which I'm not going to go into today, we can do that in the next break, is all about modulating pH, about it worries a lot about using boron, or boron is used as a breaker or an activator for certain reactions to happen. So that if that's in your water, it's bad news because you can't do your chemistry. Iron, same kind of problem. Also, there are problems when you have high levels of total suspended solids or total dissolved solids for a variety of different reactions. Okay, people have spent many millions of years, it seems to me, of man years, studying the chemistry of water, and there's no secret to a lot of this stuff. It is very, very well known, but it's a big part of our business. Slick water fracking really took off starting about 5 years ago, especially in South Texas. It was popular, and it became even more popular in the Permian Basin only in the last couple of years. It uses larger volumes of water, but we don't try to make gels. And so that simplifies the chemistry considerably, and it means that we can use very impaired water in our slick water frack jobs. So when you worry about how much water are you using, you want to know how much fresh water you're using, how much brackish water that may be almost good enough to be fresh water, and how much of it is ugly produced water that otherwise you'd send to a saltwater disposal well. So a lot of chemistry happened in order to make all of those things work. So chemists are great friends of people trying to save water in the oil and gas business. In Apache, we have one story that we like to tell a lot. We developed in Irion County. That's about half, for those of you who don't know West Texas, it's the southeast part of the Permian Basin. It's about halfway between Midland and San Angelo. It's a very beautiful rural area that was extremely worried about water 5 years ago. It had one of the most challenged municipal water areas. And we said, okay, we're going to develop this area, and we're not going to use any fresh water. And everybody said, ha, 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 Cal, tell me how. Well, we did it. How did we do it? All those things I just told you about. We took a lot of looking at chemistry and stuff, but we also realized that we could use Santa Rosa water, which is a brackish water. It's a huge, big, brackish water aquifer in the Permian Basin. So it is another gift to the Permian Basin that a lot of people ignored maybe earlier on. And, you know, we had to go try it. And fortunately, you know, Apache just said, go do it. There was no obstacle other than you better make money at the end of the day, but I'll let you waste some money in the beginning. That underground aquifer we studied, we had a lot of help. We had some very, very fine exploration geologists in Apache hit it pretty hard. We got some very good hydrologists to work with us as consultants. We found that, you know what, it had a lot of separation from any of the freshwater aquifers. We could predict where the salinity was. We could predict deliverability. We could get people who were worried about business to say, I know you can take out millions of barrels of water here every year for the rest of centuries, and you'll never notice it. Those are really good things, and it's a big gift to a lot of the Permian Basin because a lot of the Permian Basin can use this Santa Rosa water. Also, you know, the technology of cleaning up water or treating water depends on what you need. So there are 10,000 people out there having the greatest new kit that's going to save the world and make them millions. I love those people. A lot of them have great ideas. Some of them don't. But got to encourage them. This is Austin. You got to super encourage them here. So, you know, just keep talking to those folks because if there's a better, cheaper way to do it, oil companies want to find it. We like things that are simple, reliable, easy to use by guys that don't have PhDs. My favorite story, I'll make it brief. And we had a whole bunch of guys from a company that every one of you would know that's famous for doing technology. They have advertisements on television regularly about how brilliant they are in technology. They sent no less than 12 PhDs to a site to try to make fresh water from produced water. I don't know how they did it, but I can tell you we can't afford it. So anyway, one of the things that we as Apache put a lot of work into was chlorine dioxide. And chlorine dioxide is a very, very commonly used in municipal water. It turns out to be very, very good for treating produced water in most of Texas. It can be used. It's made on site, so you don't have any of the problems of transporting a nasty chemical. It is a selective oxidizer. It degrades very quickly. For us, it partitions oil and water, which is fabulous. It has surfactant properties. You know, these are little things that are really important that make it different from, say, bleach. It cleaves bacterial DNA molecules, which really means it's a biocide. Although it's not registered as a biocide in some places, it works as one. And it's widely used. So we started using it in our Barnhart project. We made a mess at first. A mess literally because it floats everything to the top. That's how it works. And we had to skim and do things, and we were all running around like a bunch of idiots. These are pictures of some of our early problems. I don't know if you can see in the middle there. It doesn't look too good. That's just to show you that innovation doesn't start with being perfect first. Don't be afraid of making mistakes. Just go with it. And, you know, then we came up with some pretty much better ideas. And this is our third generation of our water system at Barnhart. And then we pre-treat a lot of water with chlorine dioxide. Then we send it, we even do some other chemicals that we pre-treat before chlorine dioxide because chlorine dioxide is more expensive than some other chemicals. We're back to using weir tanks in this thing to separate solids. We have flotation devices in them. Everything just kind of, this is designed to use 40,000 barrels a day. It can work pretty well at 25,000 barrels a day. It doesn't work so well at 5,000 barrels a day. But it gets water exactly as we need, and we pump it straight to our frack jobs. Or we can send it to a water flood, because we also own a water flood nearby if we don't have fracking going on. So in Barnhart, our biggest achievement was we didn't use any fresh water. We're very proud of that. Lots of people got together and made that happen. We got 80,000 truckloads of water off the road a year. Every oil company can hardly wait to get truckloads of water off. Why? Because they're the most expensive part of water management. Also, everybody hates them, including us. We're the guys that are driving around out there the most after the locals. So we got to get rid of those trucks. And we found that we could have dependable fracks at lower costs. Everyone asked me about cost. Well, this is a non-dollar cost. It's up 100% over here on the right is fresh, or right, my right. It's the left for all of you. the fresh water disposal is the biggest part of fresh water, equaled almost by operating costs. That operating cost is transportation primarily, okay, and purchase of fresh water. We always pay landowners for water in West Texas, probably everywhere in Texas. We're talking about Texas, so you don't get a lot out of a river for free. Somebody pays for it. When you want to treat brackish water, when you use brackish water, instead you have to build a field that produces brackish water. So that's our capital recovery part of it. We have to pay someone still for brackish water. In our case, we paid the same landowner we were paying for fresh water. Of course, he was thrilled. We were using brackish water instead of the stuff he'd water his cows with. Operating costs actually go way down because you're transporting way less by using pipes. And we still have big disposal costs if we don't recycle it, okay? So if you just use brackish water and you're all done, you still have to dispose of this stuff. Then we do batch-treated produced water. That was our early days of making messes. You can see the cost is only half of the cost of using fresh water. That makes every executive in an oil company get really excited. You're saving money doing something that's good for the world? That's the only way you can really get it done in the oil field, folks. I mean, if it costs a ton of money, people push back. Save them money. They love it. So we did even better. Our inline treated facility is just over 30% of the cost of fresh water in the same place. This works for big fields. It doesn't work for small stuff. The big challenge we're facing is how to do it for small stuff. You have geniuses out there working in Austin that want to find solutions to it. Let's get the small stuff working efficiently. Another thing we did, and I better hurry here, it looks like, in College Station, we decided to use effluent. So this is the College Station. You're here at UT, so you know that we have to remember that this color here is not a UT color. It is not an A&M color either. This is what? Those are effluent lines painted the famous color required by the TCEQ for effluent lines. So, you know, this is a blend of all the college colors in Texas. Yeah, so we did that, and we just treated it with chlorine dioxide afterward. I've told you we like that a lot. So we had the cleanest water in Texas probably being stored in big tanks. Mostly we watched things settle out before we could use them. We also filtered and stuff. But we stopped doing this because we're not fracking in this area anymore. But it was a very generous deal for everybody, and the city of College Station loved it too. I did tell you that we're looking at new technologies. We've been looking at this one for a long time, trying to make it work for smaller smaller jobs, 10,000 barrels a day or less. This is a ceramic microfiltration. It's treated with a nano material designed by Rice University. It has some very special things to it about filtration that doesn't work whenever you don't coat it, but we're hoping that we can use more and more advanced technology as we go on. One other big thing that we've done is try to recycle water into the same disposal layer that we could pull water out of. This isn't always so easy, but if you can use really impaired water in your fracs, you might as well start with it. And because you overpressurize those reservoirs whenever you put a lot of disposal water in, that also leads to things like, in some places, seismicity, like Peter was talking about earlier today. We don't have such a problem with seismicity in the central part of the Midland Basin, but that's one thing we can do. I always like to leave questions for you all to think about. I heard this group was trying to think about big issues. I'm not here to tell you the big answer to these issues. You can read some of them, but when I look at it, it's why is the risk of aquifer pollution any different with hydraulic fracturing than conventional oil and gas? I don't care what the folks in the New York Times might have said. I don't see any difference. We've had a lot of good regulations put in by the Railroad Commission. I think that people following the regulations really protect shallow water resources that are freshwater resources in Texas, and there's really no distinction between a well that's going to be hydraulically fractured and one that's not. Should we protect brackish or saline water resources as something way above my pay grade, I suppose? But if I could make you all think about it, I can treat water of any quality to use it. I can't treat it for free, okay? If I boil the stuff, I can take the ugliest garbage water you've ever seen and you can have drinking water. That costs energy, it costs money, on and on and on. So you have to ask, what do municipalities really need to protect? And I would argue very logically that huge parts of brackish water in Texas have no future as municipal water at all. You might as well use them for an industrial source. So put that as part of your study of evaluating the cost-benefit ratio of protecting different kinds of water, because there's a lot of people in Austin that are advocating that all brackish water ought to be protected. And I mean protected for municipalities. That'll have a big impact on our industry. What standard, how to facilitate produced water recycle. A lot of people are also just against the idea of moving produced water from a field to a frac job. And I'll tell you, you're moving water all over the state anyway. It's a pretty false argument in this state to suggest that it's bad. Figure out how to do it safely. Make sure there are rules that make it safe and economic. You do not want to discourage this part of your business. If you're going to have oil and gas in Texas, you really want to be able to use produced water forever. And how do we encourage sustainable solutions? I mean, that is really the big ticket for the oil and gas business in this state. We have to make it work economically. We have to be sustainable. And let's not bury our heads and be in the sand. Let's not be enemies about it. Let's solve problems. Thank you so much.
Okay, so we do have some time for questions.
Sure.
Are there opportunities to use the large volumes of produced water from conventional wells for hydraulic fracturing, or is it?
I think, did you hear me?
I did, yeah. Does the rest of the room hear you? Okay, yeah, sure, we already do. I mean, usually you're trying to keep pressure up in a produced, in a well where you're, sorry, in a field where you're taking a lot of produced well water from, and so you're re-injecting into that field. Sometimes you're just disposing of water from produced fields, and in those cases, you know, we have used it when we own the field and it's nearby a place we're fracking.
So you made a comment that basically any water can be used for fracking purposes. So my question then is then why are we having to inject so much water into, you know, deep reservoirs or into deep geological structures instead of just recycling it? And you mentioned it was, you know, a matter of cost. But if there are potentially other risks associated with that injection, is that not a cost that just needs to be incurred?
Well, you know, the risk was everything we do, and so that's a very good question, you know, to quantify what the risks are and how they have an economic impact. And, you know, I'm not even beginning to be prepared to tell you how to do that right now. But I think your point is, you know, there are places where there's much more produced water being reinjected than other places. So that has to do with the plays, with the fields and stuff. There are certain fields that are essentially dewatering plays where, you know, they might be taking water cuts in excess of 90% of the produced fluids, and that water gets disposed of in saltwater disposal wells, and that's a problem in certain places. I think that in most of West Texas especially, we don't see anything like that yet. I'm not to tell you it will never happen, but it's not happening now. So what produced water we have, we can talk about recycling it in a lot of places. It varies a lot. So what is the TDS of the Santa Rosa? The Santa Rosa ranges from nearly fresh at about 3,000 TDS. Over broad areas, it's under 10,000 TDS. And in places, it goes up to about 120,000 TDS that we've measured.
Cal, how are the technologies that Apache is developing sort of penetrating the other industries and smaller companies that are out in the place?
We have a lot of copycats. We're proud to have you copy. We didn't patent any of this stuff, you know. we have lots of people that use exactly what we're doing, and we just say go for it, guys. So I guess some people that are I don't know how to put it. I mean, you can't patent now what we've already put in the public space, so just go use it. It's an industry problem, and there are different people who patent little bits and pieces of it, but I think the problem really with small guys is they don't have the money to go do a system. And you're going to do these kind of systems when you have significant development areas or when you're in an area where there are a lot of operators that can share water. You're not going to do it if you're a guy with a three-well program, and that's your whole life.
Okay, well, let's thank our speaker again.
Thank you.